Session number 12246, Lieutenant Colonel W. Waitman, Reel
29. Colonel W. A. Waitman, Reel 29. Were there regulations laid down, Colonel, which told you what kind of response you had to give to a given activity?
Yes, quite apart from our general internal security training, which also included emphasis on specific aspects of internal security operations, for which we trained our airmen and were indeed practicing both within the confines of RAF Station Nicosia and the surrounding area, because naturally you just can't guard your station by sitting behind barbed wire or the liners of Torres Vedras or whatever the modern equivalent. You've got to get out and about and patrol and make sure that the area round about is kept sterile for possible infiltration. Regarding opening fire, the red card that was produced by the Chief of Staff in December 1955 and the policy laid down in that each individual carried a red card, that policy persisted right through until the end of the emergency in 1959 and stood the test of time. It emphasised at the outset in paragraph one the individual's responsibility that before you use force, it is always your duty to assess the situation confronting you and to decide what degree of force is necessary. If, having done this carefully and honestly, you decide that there is no alternative but to open fire, then do so. You'll be doing your duty and acting lawfully, whatever the consequences. And this was reinforced by a later policy statement from the Chief of Staff, Director of Operations, immediately responsible of the Government of Cyprus, that providing people concerned acted in good faith, they would receive the full support of the headquarters, COSDO, as it was called, Chief of Staff, Director of Operations. That it was clear that you should only open fire to defend yourself, your comrades, families, police, and all peaceable inhabitants against serious attack, and to protect against serious damage all government property, buildings, installations, vehicles, and equipment, or to disperse a riotous mob that you honestly believe will cause serious injury to life and property if not forcibly prevented, and to arrest persons committing acts of violence or whom you honestly believe have done so or are about to do so and to prevent their escape. It was laid down when you should not fire. It was obvious you could achieve your object by other means. Or if you remember a party and the orders of a superior, never to fire and given the order to do so. How to fire? Always fire aimed shots and aim at the part of the body you're least likely to miss, i.e. the middle. And never to fire warning shots over people's heads, because you could very well kill or wound someone totally unconnected with the incident. Then brief, clear orders were laid down for sentries and pickets, that if you're other persons, if you or the place you're guarding are attacked with armed explosives, you open fire at once. If you think you're about to be attacked in any way, challenge loudly. Bring your weapon to the aim and call out the guard. If the person challenged halts, get a member of the guard to investigate. But if he does not and you really believe he's about to attack you with arms explosives, shoot him at once. Escort orders laid down for convoys, whether vehicles moving in packets of two or three or larger convoys, and individual self-defense. If you're attacked with arms or explosives, shoot the attackers at once, wherever you are. And if off-duty, don't join in brawls, always avoid trouble if you can. Then, of course, report any incident to the nearest civil police or military police post and your unit, giving details of the location, details of the incident, the method of attack, description of the assailants, and when applicable, the number of rounds fired and results. That red card remained in force for 4 years, and a similar instructions are issued to the security forces of Northern Ireland today.
Were they strictly adhered to?
Absolutely. I've got my notes here, which is Wing Intelligence Officer for number 5, Lifegak Wing, that I prepared on the 4th of December 1955, with a complete update so that all new officers arriving would be briefed, whether they came singly or in groups of two or three, on joining the wing or the unit, and airmen arriving were briefed collectively on the security situation at RAF Station Nicosia. I refer again to my date of the 4th of December 1958. The station, its operational role in the Suez assault, RAF Nicosia provided facilities for Canberra bombers, fighters and the transport force in October-November 1956. In the Jordan-Lebanon crisis of 1958, it provided fighter and transport force facilities. The civil airport was used throughout by commercial airlines and the Royal Air Force air trooping. The threat of AOCA to the station can be summarised as possible sabotage by civilian employees, possibly Armenian sympathisers, disloyal Turks, or Maronites under pressure, or even possibly Greeks disguised as servicemen, with possibly bombs in purchased goods and rations, bombs in building and construction material, bombs in the mail, bombs in children's living out buses was a possibility, roads, tracks leading to the airfield being mined, bombs in the civilian air terminal by airline passengers, or even armed infiltration by small groups, attack on vulnerable points, fire against aircraft coming in to land on the number 3-4 runway, bombs coming up in stores from the docks. So we had to be on the lookout for all these and make sure that everybody on the station, both living on the base and living out, were fully aware of these possible threats at any time. The chain of command was the station commander, Group Captain Bill Taken, with responsibility to delegated to wing commanders of the administrative flying technical wings and the RAF regiment wing commander Roy MacDonald, and the office commanding number 113 maintenance unit, which was at the north side of the RAF station. And filtering down the chain of command to the station security officer himself, squadron leader Bill Higgins, and the Prevost officer, Flight Lieutenant Don Prosser-Higdon. The station security officer was based in the security office in the centre of the station, and the Prevost officer in his office at the main guard room at the main gate. The station duty security officer, which was provided by the Irish Regiment, operated from a caravan, the mobile light anti-aircraft control post outside the station security office. Security orders were published in the station routine orders and repeated again in wing routine orders in the various wings that I've just referred to. And then posters and orders regulations displayed in the security office and the wing intelligence section, which was in my wooden self-constructed office of A Flight number 26 LAA Squadron. We briefed all new arrivals on the topography of the area. The station had a 12-mile perimeter and a main road on the northern side and fields, market gardens and sheep grazing round the other, all sides. We could identify the possible threats from AOKA groups, but they were never brave enough to mount an armed attack on the station after a Corporal Hale incident in the when he was killed at the Homer outside the station perimeter in March of 1956. To the west of the station was the village of Paliamatoko and then Iotramithius and Yerolacus, and we grouped them in the AOKA Akaki area under command of one Nikos Kossi, who was number 97 in the red-coloured wanted book. And the Lakatamia Deftera villages that were in Pira area under command of one codenamed Tritonis, who was believed to be Theodorus Elia. Ayas Demetius, a suburb that I've often referred to and will come back to again, between the city of Nicosia and the airport, was under command of Yanakis Matsis, and the Nicosia rural area leader was one Andreas Demetriou. The station was guarded from static posts and goon towers by some 180 to 200 RAF personnel, as well as the RAF police and the RAF regiment. I have listed the various incidents over the period 1956-58. The incidents involving aircraft, a Dakota and a Hermes were destroyed by incendiary devices and explosive in April of 1956 on the airfield. A Hunter was destroyed on the 8th of November 1956 as I was passing through, and I remember that being talked about the morning it happened. So that was a considerable success of AOKA to get a bomb into a Hunter and destroy it within the RAF station of Nicosia. A bomb explosion in 1958, one of the splinters struck a Hunter, inflicting minor damage. A bullet had been fired at aircraft, or several bullets fired at an aircraft, and one bullet hole was noted in a Viscount's wing in 1958. Then a bomb exploded in a Comet passenger's luggage at the foot of the steps on the 29th of October 1958. I'll amplify that in a moment because I was duty security officer when that happened, and Squad Leader Higgins and I went straight to the scene. Of interest, bomb incidents since the so-called 1957 truce, which Grievous called when the heat was on and he was in grave danger of being betrayed and captured, or certainly run to earth, and it gave AOKA time to reorganise. Two transformers were destroyed by high explosive bombs placed in them near the officers' mess and the number one airman's mess. This would be bombs placed there probably at night or by day when no one was around. A high explosive bomb in the chlorination plant at number 113 maintenance unit. And a high explosive bomb in a bulldozer at the Eminency Works Department. A high explosive bomb near the Bessonneau hangar, and one Hunter was struck by a splinter. Incendiary bombs in vehicle tanks in the station MT yard. Incendiary bomb in a Land Rover of number 2 Field Squadron of the RAF Regiment. 6 time pencils were found in the perimeter wire of number 113 maintenance unit in a big search operation by the RAF Regiment. On the amusing side, some documents were found, and it appeared that the Royal Ulster Rifles, who were at that time in the Morphou Zeros area, the northwest coast of Cyprus, that their Buffalo Lodge hadn't paid their subscriptions to a more senior Grand Lodge, and they were being threatened with expulsion or suspension from the Royal Antediluvian Order of Buffaloes. when the documents were picked up, first chapter find them, thought they'd got something really good on Aoka and not the buffs. There were two unexploded high explosive bombs in the RAF regiment Nafi. Two high explosive bombs destroyed diesel engines in the Emergency Works Department. And then it began to get more directed against personnel rather than vehicles and installations.
About what time was this?
In 1958. The high explosive bomb in the domestic site of Blushin in October of 1958 injured one airman. It was placed under a wash basin between the piping and the wall, and blew poor the wash basins